Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Serie Awesome. I'm Matteo Bonetti, joined by the usual crew of Mina Rizzucchi and Nikki Bandini. And today, we'll talk about the Inter badge and the modernization of Serie A clubs. We'll move on to preview some of the biggest games from the weekend, including the Turin Derby, Milan taking on Sampdoria, and Inter and all of their woes. Will they be able to put the COVID cases behind them and get a full-strength team? We'll also look back at the Italian national team and their two wins in the World Cup qualifiers and look ahead to their Euros and what their potentials could be. And finally, transfer links. It's never too early to start talking about the summer transfer window, and some big names have already been linked to various Serie A clubs. But let's start with the Inter badge. Nikki and Mina, this is something we saw already a few years ago with Juventus. They went away from the bull. They just put a J. And it feels like teams now in Serie A, they were lagging behind some other leagues in terms of maybe worldwide marketability and modernization. But this move by Inter, it feels like the reception on social media hasn't been overly positive. But then again, I feel like most people are resistant to change. What were your initial thoughts when you saw this move to a brand new logo?
I think the resistance comes 9 times out of 10 from fans of the club, and that's understandable. I think fans of a club feel attachment to symbols and certain, icons, iconography and things like that, things that you've grown up with, things that you've had as part of your heritage in some sense, because that's how we identify to our football clubs, isn't it? But I struggle to have, such a sort of visceral reaction to it. I think that I've seen so many big clubs make these sorts of changes now, not just in Italy, it's happened in England as well. It's happened all across Europe. The move is, it feels, when I look at this badge, it feels very much like an acknowledgement, whether you want it to be or not, that Juventus were on the right path, because I think it's a very similar idea. You've simplified your logo into something that is, instead of one letter, it's two, it's the I and the M, but it's basically your initials as a club. And you've turned it into something that, and I think I wrote this at the time about the Juventus logo, something that could be relatively easily shaved into a haircut, tattooed onto someone, could be used on a social media logo stamp that's very simple and easy to read. It is easy to read, a bit less so than the Juventus one, but still easy to read. And I think that really matters. It's a lot about, we want this stamp that can go anywhere in the world and you can see the I and the M and everyone gets it. There's some stuff that's been said around it, like, oh, the M was designed to evoke the Duomo in Milan. I think some of that's reaching a little bit for me, but it's pretty enough. Like, it's fine. And I think it does what it needs to do. I don't hate it. I don't have hugely strong opinions about it, if I'm being honest.
I think you'll only ever have a hugely strong reaction to it if you are a fan of the club. So I agree with that when you're saying, I think most of the visceral reactions did indeed come from the Inter fans. When I look at it, to me, it looks like a digital logo. It looks like something that belongs on a computer. It kind of looks like Bitcoin. I don't know what Bitcoin is like. But I imagine, you know, like it's just these little tokens, you know, that kind of just look nice and colorful and you buy them. Just goes to show you about my intelligence on cryptocurrency. But one thing is that I'm the kind of person that loved their old logo, their first and their last logo. I love the gold. Maybe I'm a little bit bougie or a little bit like, you know, I'm the type of person who like have, you know, a lion's head when you walk into my house, but I have to be stopped most of the time because that's where I will indulge. So I loved the fact that I thought their old one just looked like it exuded glamour. It was very like, you know, gold and the Internazionale. I just felt like it was grand. And I feel like this one is in keeping with the times. It's very modern. I think it's very graphic. It's just a very, you know, blue, nothing too much, nothing gold and grand about it. But I do think it is in keeping with the times. But, and I always feel like when people want to rebrand, the logo is the first thing they look at. And I always feel like it should be the last thing. I don't know why. I just feel like there are other things to obtain, first of all, objectives to accomplish first, before you can really start that. But listen, it worked for Juventus. The J really made a difference. It made it very much recognized around the world. So whatever makes them happy, I guess.
Just on that point, I feel like changing the logo is by far the easiest thing to do, right? You just get a graphic designer.
That is true, yeah.
He changes the logo. It's much easier than, say, building a new stadium, especially in Italy, when you have to deal with all the bureaucracy, if you're trying to find a new ground, or even refurbishing it, right? So that would be kind of the step that I think us three would want to see a lot of Serie A teams take, following in the steps of Juventus or even Udinese, who built kind of like this mini Juventus stadium in Friuli. But it's much more difficult to do than, you know, just look at Roma and all the struggles that they've had. And I think my reaction, having been raised in America and seeing here how teams move even from city to city and change locations completely, could you imagine if that ever happened in Italy? Like, when you see the backlash from all the older Italian fans, right, that are, they're always like, oh, in my day, and obviously they want the Calcio logos to stay the same. There was so much backlash at first when the Juventus logo was put out, and then everyone was kind of fine with it, right? I don't think anyone talks about the J anymore. People just want to see the team win and play good football. Just like this, there's always this reaction to change, but it kind of got me thinking, imagine the reaction if there is this much for a club logo in Italy, if a team actually moved cities, which isn't really possible because the teams have, you know, they have the name of the city. That's their identity, is the city. Inter or AC Milan doesn't just become AC, I don't know, Cremona, for example, and move to another city in Lombardy. So it's just funny to see this highly traditional culture of Italians kind of now modernizing. Mina?
I wanted to say something that you were saying about, like, it looks like a graphic design. Yeah. And I was like, you know, their first logo was designed by a painter. Like, a painter sat down and drew and painted that whole logo. And that just makes you feel like you're living in the Da Vinci era. Yeah. And now it's like this guy that you feel behind, you know, like a graphic designer, like coming up with this logo. And that's what I feel like upsets a lot of those traditionalists. You know, it kind of just feels also modern and less grand. But I do also like the story of the I'm, you know, like that, you know, there are two letters that you can really sort of, I like that. I'm this and I'm, you know, I think that that's a great storyline behind it, which I don't think Juventus had with their J.
Yeah, I think some of what you just said, Mina, is generational, like completely, like that sort of harking to like the grandeur of it. And I'm actually with Gab Marcotti, who tweeted that his favorite Inter logo was the one with the old serpent on it, because I actually love that sort of old cheesy like silliness. That's that's what makes my heart sing. I think one thing that is really interesting about this story is just the timing of it, because this week we also had reports that Suning's potential sale of some share in the club to BC Capital may have collapsed. That's what's being reported at the moment, and it's just such a, I don't know how else to put it, an interesting moment for this club, which is clearly having some liquidity issues with Suning. You have Stephen Zhang, who's saying very publicly that they want to stay at the forefront. They don't want to relinquish control of the club. And I think I believe sincerely that he as an individual really does want to remain in control of the club. I think it's a passion project for him. Whether or not his family's business can support it is another question. And this sort of simultaneous moment of, here we are modernizing, rebranding, trying to win the league and getting quite close at the moment. But also there's this whole business side of it that feels very uncertain. There's a precariousness to it. But in the end, the logo can stay whatever happens. And I think whether it's the same owners or new ones, it's something else that looks good for the club and that helps carry the brand internationally.
So let's quickly touch upon Inter's match this weekend. They're back in action. They're against Bologna. Remember that before the international break, there was that whole chaos with four players of Inter testing positive for COVID, the game against Sassuolo getting postponed, which is going to be played in the first week of April. But this weekend, they take on Bologna. And just looking at the predicted 11, it's almost full strength. They're saying that, okay, Ranocchia might be playing the back three. He hardly ever gets time. But other than that, Lukaku and Lautaro are going to lead the line. You're going to have Barella, Eriksen. Hakimi's there. Skriniar and Bastoni are there. This is going to be another 3 points for Inter, isn't it? They weathered the COVID storm a few weeks ago, and it just doesn't feel like this is a team that's going to lose points from now until the end of the season against teams like Bologna.
Sort of given up trying to figure out or how to predict things. But I do agree with you. I think that what Inter has given us now is that they've taken away the parts that are about them and they just seem to be a machine. And I think that they do benefit from the fact that there wasn't South American qualifiers. Lautaro Martinez was there. Alexis Sanchez was there training with the side. So you feel like without those travels, it's great. And, you know, Lukaku might be just a little tired after his exertions with Belgium, but you still imagine he's strong enough and capable of and ambitious enough to want to play all these matches and be the guy that is at the forefront of this Inter success story. It's Bologna. Bologna, to me, I always think is that it can be a potential banana slip, but not this season. You know, we've seen them have some ridiculous results. They are very good when they put their head to it, but this is the problem, is that they only ever do so for 20 minutes or so. So when you look at that, you think, yep, it's another 3 points. Having said all of that, I'm always wary when teams are a little bit exhausted, especially when they do play that style of football and whether or not you can give everything. But because they did have a lot of players not doing that, so they did have a time to rest. Yeah, you would imagine it's 3 easy points.
I think the one thing that sort of is in my head with this game, well, there's two things actually. First of all, they play last this weekend, which maybe, just maybe, if Milan win and that gap is temporarily down to 3 points, it's 2 games they'll have in hand at that moment in time, but it's a little bit of pressure. I think you're right that Bologna are one of those teams who are difficult sometimes, and Mihailovic makes them difficult sometimes, and there's players there like Soriano who can certainly do things. On paper, there's no question Inter are the favourites. They've won 8 games in a row. They're doing everything right. I think if there's going to be a wild card week, it's the week after the international break. Mm. So
Barella's performance for Italy, I feel like he looked a little bit tired, no?
Yeah. So there's a chance. If you're looking for weeks where there could be a surprise, I think this is one of them. But if you're asking me what I expect Inter to win.
And let me pick up on Mina's point, because this is something that's been characteristic now for ever since we've seen Antonio Conte managing, is that his sides tend to tire out in the second half of seasons. I remember speaking to an ex-player who had trained under Antonio Conte, and he said that those are by far the most difficult and vigorous training sessions that he's ever been a part of. And this is something that's been echoed by other players who know what it's like to train for Conte. And this tends to have a ramification in the second half of the season when players get tired and when you start getting those injuries, especially now in a calendar that is so congested. Granted, Inter don't have any European football. They're out of the Coppa Italia, so they just have to focus on Serie A, and I don't think it's going to bother them that much. So the last question about Inter, fair to say that they're the team that benefited the most from the international break?
It's funny because we're talking about who comes back tired, and I was watching, just minutes before we came on here, I was watching a clip someone had shared of Hakimi flying down the wing for Morocco, and I was thinking to myself, if I'd done that run, I'd need to sleep for a week. So there might be some tired legs. I don't know. I mean, the COVID situation, I said it at the time, I think that the way that Sassuolo were coming off a tight run of games, Inter would have probably preferred to just play that game, even missing Handanovic and De Vrij, was it, who was also out? Either way, I don't know if I feel like they're the ones who necessarily benefited the most, but they're definitely not feeling too bad about it. They haven't had a sort of Bayern Munich situation where everyone comes back and they're not able to play, so I think they feel fine about it. And what they really feel good about is just the fact that Juventus lost right before the break.
Yeah, exactly. But Matteo, I think that the point that you bring up, which may not so much is one to consider this season because of the way that things have panned out and the fact that they did drop from 2 competitions. But, you know, looking ahead to the future, you know, are we sure they can guarantee the financial future at Inter? If Antonio Conte does stay, can the style of play continue to work for them when they are playing in different competitions? And they will be, every year expectations grow, right? Like, it's, you know, right now Milan dream of making top four. Once they make top four, it's like you've got to start doing better every year. And with Inter, it's going to be like, well, you've got to start doing something in the Champions League. With Juventus, unless they win the treble, they're just basically losers, you know. I mean, Allegri was just boring with winning domestic trophies. So my question, I guess, is them looking forward what's going to happen when it comes to that. What are the decisions that can really safeguard the future of this team? Because right now, I am actually a fan of Steven Zhang. I think that he has handled this club rather well. I don't know why I have a soft spot for him. I think he's like a fan, but at the same time, I think that they've made some really good decisions in trying to widen the brand of Inter and make it more appealing to the world. I think they've built the team perfectly. Pepe Marotta strong. Antonio Conte has returned that winning mentality, trying to rob them of that Pazza label. But how are they, what is going to be their plan going forward? And can these exhaustive tactics bring them what they need the most, which is, to be frank, money? And money is really attained through European competition.
Well, Mina, you made the link that the new Inter logo looks like the Bitcoin logo. I think Inter going to be hoping that they have a similar meteoric rise, just like Bitcoin has had in the last year. We can only hope, given the team that Inter has assembled, and it's kind of scary to think if they just add a few more pieces, that they could be genuinely considered to be a side that can go far in the Champions League. But let's move on to the main game this weekend, the Turin Derby, which has been very one-sided in recent history, obviously pointing to the favor of Juventus. It's Juventus against Torino. Juventus take on a Torino side that is only 1 point above the drop. So two sides fighting for very different things. So I think the first question is this kind of like a last gasp game for Juventus to have any sort of chance of the Scudetto? Or are we writing them off already with about a month and a half left in the season?
Write them off. Rubbish. Rubbish. Madness. I wish. Oh, Matteo, you missed our last podcast. But I really did have faith that they would do something special. I'll be honest with you. I wasn't so down and out even after Porto. But I think that match against Benevento and... it's just a disaster. Like, I don't know who to trust in that club, to be honest. I've tried really hard to protect Aruki Coach because I think it's my belief that we should always protect those who haven't had the experience and been put in a position that they may not like, you know. And we've seen, like, you know, when it happened to Clarence Seedorf or different coaches in big clubs, and you want to make sure that they're not getting sort of the big brunt of it, because the Juventus has been poorly managed this season. That needs to be talked about. I think their behavior has been poor as well. You know, the things that have been said, the arguments that have been had, all in all, it's not been wonderful. But I think that there were a lot of good things that I did see from the side. There was a lot of unpredictability. Even if you look at the stats of Ronaldo, the way that he partakes in the games, even though we've seen several performances that perhaps weren't to his level because we judge him so exceptionally high, you know, like, oh, you know, he didn't score a hat trick against Porto. Is he no longer Ronaldo? But even if you look at that, there is a lot more unpredictability to his game. And yet, this is a side that I feel like sometimes can be a sycophantic ode to, like, Guardiola's football. At other times, I think, oh, wow, look, you know, we are trying to be a little bit more like Allegri and pragmatic in the situation. The truth is that the midfield is just a little bit rubbish, right? And we're asking Ronaldo to basically be a giant plaster. And when he can't be a plaster, it's all difficult. And it worries me that there is Torino, because when you look at the reverse fixture, that was a tough game. And more importantly, Nicola is somebody that I think, if you just look at that match against Inter, the way that he can take space away, the way that he can make it really difficult and prey on the weaknesses of his opponent. His team is not fantastic. So it's not always going to go to plan. Mistakes are very easily provoked from that side. This is why they're having the problems that they're having. But right now, one thing that I could always depend on with Juventus has been the strength of their coach. They've always relied on teachers, maybe not Sarri, but teachers in general who have always managed to navigate the situation well. Can I really right now rely on Pirlo? I don't think so.
Hey, I just to come back to Matteo's question, is this game a pivotal one? I mean, in a sense, yes. Because you definitely can't afford to lose again. But the question we're now starting to ask, or at least I'm starting to ask in my head, is if Juventus win every game from here to the end of the season, every game, is even that going to be enough? Because it's 10 points now in 10 games. That's the gap. You've lost your game in hand. So it's literally you need Inter to drop 10 points for a start, which...
You're banking on the title.
Well, the question Matteo asked was about the title, whether or not we should be talking about that. Yeah, that's a fair, it's a fair point. You know, this team probably needs to be looking behind itself much more than in front.
I'm scared we're not going to make top four.
Yeah, and
I'm glad you're mentioning that, because that was my follow up. Is it's looking behind more so than looking ahead with the top four spots. I mean, could you imagine what an absolute catastrophe it would be for a team that's won 9 straight Scudetti, that's gone to 2 Champions League finals during this dynasty period of the 2010s, to now not even make the top four? But with the way that they're playing, I mean, you look back at that game against Benevento and so many others against teams in the bottom half of the table, it's soulless and uninspired and there's no identity. And ironically, we've been rightfully so criticizing the midfield, which has been their weakness. This is kind of, you know, everyone can agree on that in this nature of fans disagreeing about everything. Everyone can agree the Juve midfield is a problem. And you look at the Champions League game, it was Rodrigo Bentancur and a terrible mistake that allowed Porto to have a chance and end up scoring a goal. And against Benevento, in a game where you say, maybe this is our last hope for the Scudetto, it's Arthur with an elementary pass across the pitch, across his own box, which ended up being the lone goal for Benevento. So 2 catastrophic errors from their midfielders. And you're looking at a team that is so incomplete at the moment. And, you know, all this talk that we've had this season, even on Serie Awesome, about they have to build for Ronaldo. For one more year, do you really build a team around him now for just one more year, maybe of Cristiano Ronaldo? I know there's going to be a sit-down this summer with the superstar, but I think the biggest question now is, right, you have to start looking ahead. And maybe I'm even changing my tune that I said there's no rebuild with Cristiano Ronaldo. This feels like a rebuild now because I don't even know what this team is. You have a manager that's learning on the job. There's so many questions that need to be answered. And then there's Paulo Dybala, who's back in training for this game against Torino. I had forgotten completely about his name. When I heard the name, I was like, oh, yeah, he's still a Juventus player. Paulo Dybala, who 5 years ago was one of maybe the top 3 best Serie A players. So what is going to go on now with Paulo Dybala?
Because last season.
Sorry, Nikki?
He was MVP last season. You're saying 3 seasons ago, he was officially, I didn't necessarily share the verdict, but he was the league's MVP last season.
Nikki, you're after my own heart. Anyway.
I think the rebuild question is such a big one now, because I agree with you. Are you trying to do something with Ronaldo this last season or not? And even if you have a firm idea in your mind about that, whether you've decided that, yes, we are definitely all in on this last year of Ronaldo, which officially kind of is the line out of Paratici and the rest. They are saying, no, he's our player. He's a 5-time Ballon d'Or winner. We're going to make the most of him. How do you do that? Who do you put in charge? And we've all given some leniency for Pirlo this season. And I think there are things that he's done well. I think that Federico Chiesa, as we've talked about over and over again, has come on much ahead of where I thought he'd be. And I think you can see the shades of grey. You can say, I actually do think Andrea Pirlo gets some credit for that. Another manager might not have. But I think it was just this week, Kulusevski gave some quotes in which he was asked why his first season hadn't gone quite as well as he hoped it could. And he said, look, it's difficult when you're being played in a different position every game.
Yeah.
And yes, exactly. that might not be explicit, but in my ears, that's a dig at the manager.
Mina, don't make an excuse for Bernardeschi now.
I don't think it's even Pirlo's fault. I mean, listen, at the end of the day, Pirlo had I'm not here to defend him.
Well, the manager chooses their positions. He does. Yeah,
exactly. But he has been shuttled around in that with Allegri, with Sarri, with everyone. He's never been able.
No, Kulusevski.
Did I say
Bernardeschi?
I said Bernardeschi, just because I wanted to get a reaction from Mina.
But Kulusevski, is my fear is that he will be Bernardeschi. You know, God, it's just annoying that they all rhyme. But like, this is my fear, because right now, if you don't establish at an age, you know, where they're playing and what's happening, their development takes longer. And that doesn't mean that, you know, you could be, but you just look at Bernardeschi. He does all the simple things correctly for the national team. He understands his role. Everything just runs so much smoother when he's wearing the blue shirt of Italy. But when it comes to the Bianconeri stripes, you don't know if he's a fullback, he's a winger, he's a scorer. And then I was looking at some of the games, you know, like, for example, the comeback against Atletico Madrid, like, He has had great moments, but because I feel like he's never been developed in the right way, because there was always someone better to put in that role so that he could sacrifice. A lot was done with this with Marchisio as well. You know, Marchisio was sent out wide by Conte, then he was brought in, then he was Pirlo, but he had supreme tactical intelligence. And I think this is something that we need to talk about as well, about building. We need to have players that feel something for the jersey. There has to be a sense of belonging, right? And I do, like, this is something that has been brought up by the papers recently. You know, Arrigo Sacchi was talking about it, because when can you ever get Arrigo Sacchi to stop talking for once? Yeah. But it is that sense of, like, Calabria, for example, Romagnoli, Donnarumma, they feel Milan. You know, and right now, you know, or for a while it was, you know, Giorgio Chiellini and Leonardo Bonucci, even though Bonucci didn't grow up with Juventus, but there is that belonging to the shirt. And I'm worried about the next generation, how many people really feel that. And then I look at the transfer rumors, you know, and I don't mind this team being pragmatic. I don't mind relying on Ronaldo, and then they get themselves, you know, Sergio Aguero, because he's reaching that age of being over the hill and we can also bring him in, you know, because that's what Juventus do so well. But as long as the coach in charge is putting the players above his philosophy. I do not like philosophy coaches. If you are having a pragmatic team made up of great individuals, you need to decide. I mean, one of the reasons why Milan struggled at management is because Gazidis had an idea, Maldini had an idea, Boban had, you know, it's different ideas. Once it all came together and they started to get on board, that's when they started to produce. And that was largely unified by a pragmatic man. So I think this is the direction going forward. If you want to play with a philosophy, if you want to entertain, then build a team for that. But you cannot try to play a certain side without having the right personnel, because then it just looks, like I said, a sycophantic effort to be Pep Guardiola's, you know, Manchester City.
Mina, I love that we're agreeing so much on this episode, but I want to go back to January 2020. Giorgio Chiellini kind of echoed what you're saying as well, that you have this pragmatic team, or at least that was built to be this pragmatic team under two managers like Antonio Conte and Max Allegri. And Giorgio Chiellini came out in the media about a year and 3 months ago, and he said, the reason why we haven't seen this Sarri ball is because throughout our whole career, which had been 8-9 years of Juventus playing one style that was very different to Sarri, or kind of different from now what Pirlo's, whatever Pirlo's trying to do, he said, we had always been taught, when you lose the ball, you try to win it back very quick. If you don't, you all go behind the ball. And now you have this guy coming in, trying to change your DNA, saying, no, you lose the ball, you always press forward, you always press, you take risks. Juventus was never a risk-taking team. They were a team that knew how to defend a 1-0 lead better than any side in Europe at one point with the BBC. They were a team that had a very set fundamental way of playing the game, which was different than kind of like now the new age philosopher, right? Which is all out attack, high line. I mean, even look at Bayern Munich, the reigning European champions, they leave themselves exposed to the back. That was never Juventus. And that was one of the reasons why Juventus was so successful, because they were a pain to play against. They took away what you did well. They didn't go for this aesthetic beauty. Yes, they had great individual talent from so many players across all those years that they won the Scudetto, but it was never this free-flowing football. But that's what made them great. So now you're trying to almost appease. Who are you trying to appease? Are you trying to appease the fan base? Are you trying to appease the president that he wants to see more beauty, which is, again, subjective? Like, there's this weird transition, not so with the players that they have, but this transition in philosophy, which, okay, they won a Scudetto under Sarri, but that felt like largely a negative and disappointing season, maybe because of the Champions League getting ousted by teams you should be destroying, like Lyon and Ajax, and now this season Porto. So it just feels like Juventus now, and, you know, it's easy to play the blame game. It's hard for me to blame Pirlo, because it wasn't his fault. And have you heard anything differently, Mina or Nikki, that there's no indication that he's going to lose his job? Like, everything I keep reading is, he's our guy. We're going to keep, this is our project. We're going to keep him on. Am I right in saying that? Like, there's been nothing even suggesting that his job is on the line right now.
I mean, no one said it out loud, but why would you if you weren't going to do it right now? There's no reason that you would make a public statement saying, yes, we're giving him the boot at the end of the season if you didn't want to critically undermine what's left of this season. I would be surprised. I'll put it that way. I think the way this season's gone, I'll be surprised if he's back next season. But you're right. No one has out loud said explicitly that he's going.
So no one is actually going to look at the giant elephant in the room and realize what Beppe Marotta is doing at Inter, and the fact that we, and you know, just another transfer rumor that made me want to, like, there's a potential swap between Ousmane Dembele and Paulo Dybala, because that's exactly what we need, another wide player instead of a ball player.
And Douglas Costa is coming back.
Exactly. Who's building this team? Yeah. How are you just going to have a team of just people on the flanks and nobody in the middle? Like, I'm interested to know, you know, Gossens and Douglas Costa and Bernadeschi is your, I don't know, fullback. I mean, you know, I watched Spinazzola and I think we're playing Frabotta. You gave away Spinazzola.
Oh, he would 100%. He would have been great. I love Spinazzola. He's one of the best technical dribbling wingbacks. It's perfect, you'd think, for a style that plays a 3-5-2, which is what Pirlo played for large swaths of the season.
So should we maybe not look at, you know, who gets to keep their job in management? You know, maybe just reevaluate that. Maybe somebody needs a little bit of help. Maybe there's another person that can be brought in if you don't want to lose anyone, you know? Because right now, I look at some of the decisions being made in the transfer market, and it wasn't Conte that chose Eriksen, and it might, you know, but at the end of the day, that's a team that at least are speaking to each other and figuring out what works best for them. And I do give a lot of that to Beppe Marotta, because when I look at Juventus under Conte, under Max Allegri, it was created by Beppe Marotta with Paratici, with other people, of course, you know, including their head scout who left for Manchester United at the time. But right now, something needs to be asked of management.
All right, well, it's never too early to talk about transfer window, because that's people's favorite thing now. They almost like the summer transfer window better than the actual football. At least it feels that way on social media. But the latest links, we're seeing some rumors about the likes of Gigi Donnarumma. Is he going to stay at Milan? Seen Alessio Romagnoli, the Milan captain, as well, pop up saying he wants a ton of money now, despite having his worst season at Milan. But the big name that's made all the headlines has been Sergio Kun Aguero, who's been at Manchester City for 9 seasons, where he scored double digits every single season, except in this campaign where he only played 311 minutes, scoring 1 goal. He's 32 years old, and there has been links to both Inter and Juventus. So, Mina and Nikki, where do you think would be the best fit for Sergio Kun Aguero in Serie A? And should he even go? Should teams be looking out for him?
Definitely has. He has the profile of a player who winds up in Serie A. That's not to be disparaging to Serie A, but we do have a tendency to get 30-something Argentinian footballers. There's obviously lots of really close connections between Argentina and Italy going back historically, which means a lot of families, a lot of Argentinian families have at least some Italian blood in them, and sometimes vice versa as well. So there's a lot of good historical reasons why Argentinian players quite often do feel at home when they come to Italy. I think he's got enough still to offer. I think he could certainly score goals somewhere where he's the best fit. I mean, we were just talking about perhaps Juventus need to take a step back from just trying to sign everyone who's free. But haven't we also talked a lot about the fact that Juventus maybe don't have someone in quite that profile, don't have someone in quite that, like, just a number 9. Not trying to be something else, just trying to be a number 9 and really good at it. So Juventus makes sense. I think Roma would make a heap of sense. They definitely also want someone, although is that just adding another player of a similar age profile to Edin Dzeko rather than having someone younger?
Yeah, that's a high wage as well for a team like Roma. But with Kun Aguero, I could see him. He's been such a great goal scorer now, whether it was at Atletico Madrid way earlier in his career. But it's the consistency that he's had throughout most of his career with lack of injuries, just playing consistently, scoring over 20 goals a season in the Premier League and doing it for nearly a decade has been absolutely incredible. And you're right, I feel like Serie A has been a place where players can kind of postpone the twilight of their career. They go to Serie A. We've seen it with Francesco Totti scoring until he was 40. We've seen it with Luca Toni, right? Players who kind of come of age in their late 20s or early 30s. I mean, just look at Fabio Quagliarella, another player who's played his best football in his 30s. So something about the league just really tends to work for these players.
I want to stress something on that, though, because I feel like people could misinterpret that. And I think people love to go, oh, this is evidence of something being good or bad. And it's just not that simple. Italian football is, and I think this is not a controversial view, I think it certainly isn't amongst Italians, it does sometimes play at a lower tempo than some other leagues like England or Germany. But some of these players who've come to Italy and made successes in their later career there think Carlos Tevez, he went to a Champions League final with Juventus. Mm. Think Samuel Eto'o, he won a Champions League final with Inter. So these aren't players who come to Italy and it's just that they're beating up on a certain kind of defence. They're just getting an opportunity because of the way the game is played differently to make the most of what they have in a way that perhaps the Premier League might not be as amenable to. Or having said that, honestly, I think Aguero would score goals for most Premier League teams still too.
And listen, I mean, this is the thing. I mean, people talk about it. You're right. I mean, I always mention it because I always think it's a funny line and I like these throwaway lines. But I'll be honest with you, Luis Suarez was a big loss. You know, it would have been nice to have him in Serie A. And I think that what he's doing at Atletico Madrid kind of just shows you that, right? And what a failure that was on Barcelona's behalf to let him go. So I do like balance. I think that Ibrahimovic gave a very young Milan squad something different, you know? And I do think, for example, Juventus were accused of being a very old team last year. They tried to lower the age and now they don't know if they're going to finish top four. So sometimes the age can actually bring with it a lot of experience, a lot of desire to prove yourself. I thought Carlos Tevez at the time came with this burning ambition to say, I can still do something really special. And I credit him for having built Morata at the time and for having improved even from one season to the next under Antonio Conte to Max Allegri to reach the Champions League final. And I thought he was outrageously good, you know. I think Pirlo coming in the twilight of his career when Milan didn't want him made a huge difference to Juventus too. So I think that as long as you have a nice balance where you have runners, you have pace, you have youngsters, you have older players, you have creativity, you have, you know, whatever it is, you just need balance in general. But Kun Aguero, if you look at what there is, I mean, we know that Inter is partial to an Argentinian striker. We know that obviously, like, they wouldn't mind having another backup there, although there is Alexis Sanchez, Lautaro Martinez, you know, Romelu Lukaku. I don't know when Aguero would really have a chance to play. Whereas I just think Ronaldo, Aguero, Dybala, that's kind of exciting, you know, maybe because of the Argentinian connection, even though Dybala seemingly wants a lot of money and I don't know if Juventus can make that happen. But and then have, you know, Morata when you do want to play a little bit more of a vertical style, that should all be interesting. But again, which midfield are, and you know, one thing that I do want to credit Aguero with as well is his ability to adapt to different situations. You know, obviously he played under Mancini, scored that delightful goal that got them the Premier League title, and his calmness under pressure is always something that's always been hailed for. But also how much he's grown under Pep Guardiola, the different style, that's key intelligence. And I think that when you bring him in, it's hard sometimes to play in Serie A. You know, what is asked of you on a tactical level can be a little bit annoying, you know. You're not allowed to just freely play your game. And so having somebody of that level of intellect, for me, Aguero is that. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
There is one other club we haven't mentioned that has a particularly tight history with Argentinians, and that's Napoli. Could be the next Higuain fit. Could be. But, I mean, you've just spent a lot of money on Osimhen, so do you want to spend all of that wage money?
And exactly, are they going to play them together? I don't think that's the style of Napoli. They haven't really used two out-and-out strikers. At Inter, do you mess with Lautaro and Lukaku, who are young, who are growing together, who have a great chemistry? Mm. I feel like Aguero's best situation in Italy is with Juventus. A healthy Aguero plays over a healthy Morata. Can you incorporate Dybala and Ronaldo alongside him? Aguero is a player that can play in link-up, that can play a pass, that's got good technical ability for a number nine. Great movement inside the box. I think that would be an excellent short-term signing. He can stay healthy and get back to his best form that unfortunately he hasn't been able to play much this season. But it's a very interesting one to keep your eyes on. And there are the Argentine links in City obviously are ones to always look out for, especially that Argentines tend to, in a lot of cases, have Italian passports through grandparents. So that makes it easier with the non-EU thing as well to go right away in Serie A and a team not to give up one of those non-EU slots. Let's move over to Gigio Donnarumma. There's been links to Juventus. It feels like basically every good player in Serie A is linked to Juventus. Juventus are like, oh, he's the best player in Roma. We'll have him. Do we need him? No, we'll still take him. Miralem Pjanic, great, come over here. And it's constantly the case with Juventus, just snapping up the best players, regardless of if it's a position of need. You'd feel like you have Wojciech Szczesny. Do you really need Donnarumma? Okay, he's a better keeper, but it's not exactly a position of need, the goalkeeper. I really like Wojciech Szczesny. Here's the latest, though, on Gigio Donnarumma. There's still no agreement signed between Donnarumma and Milan. His contract is going to expire in 2 months' time from the recording of this podcast, but the Milan board is still, quote-unquote, confident and is in talks to find a solution. That's from Sky Italia. And Raiola has not received any bids from Chelsea for Donnarumma as of yesterday. And apparently the backup for Donnarumma, if he were to go, is Mike Maignan from Lille in Ligue 1. So where do you think Donnarumma is going to end up next season?
I mean, this is really difficult because for me, like, I'm somebody who really genuinely believed at the time Buffon's arrival to Juventus made sure of pretty much every trophy. You know, I mean, this is a guy that guarantees you points with his saves. Donnarumma is that type of goalkeeper, and I do believe in the goalkeeper's ability to really rescue a season, to continue pushing you forward. And he's so young. I mean, just imagine how much better he can be with the benefit of time. I mean, Handanovic is 37, Buffon is, you know, 40, and it's just... If I was Milan, I would pay the money that I'd have to pay. It may not be ethical. It might not be the right thing to do, whatever it has to be. But I do think that for me, he's up there with Ibrahimovic. I know that we always want to spend money on our strikers. But I think also the connection that you can have as a, you know, as a defensive unit, how your defenders reply and respond, it changes a lot. And I saw that from Buffon to Szczesny. Szczesny is a good goalkeeper by all means, but you can see there was a lot more fear when he came in about how to play that line, you know, and the communication that Buffon had with Barzagli and Chiellini and Bonucci wasn't the same with Szczesny. Sometimes they played a little bit higher because they weren't as sure of his movements or what was going to happen. These things make a difference. And if you already have that in place in a defensive unit that has been well equipped and well built, I would pay all the money in the world for it.
I feel like I'm often a middle ground person on this podcast. I feel like I'm often a fence sitter more than I should be. And I think that when Donnarumma first was breaking through, I think I tried to say a lot and often, let's not put too much on this kid. But if you ask me today, I think he's the most important person at Milan. It's not Ibrahimovic. It's not close to being Ibrahimovic. It's Donnarumma.
Yeah.
I think he's going to be the best goalkeeper in the world. And I think he's well on the way to that. I think he's already comfortably, in my opinion, now the best goalkeeper in Serie A. I think he's extraordinary. I think he's going to be a goalkeeper that in 10 years' time we're talking about as someone who had this extraordinary career. And I think he's that good. Do you think this situation for Milan now is almost a lose-lose? Because I don't think this ever ends as long as you keep him, because his agent is Mino Raiola.
You need to get rid of
Mino Raiola will always want more money for his clients and more money for himself. And that's fair enough. That's his job. He has no responsibility to not want to do that. But there is no Mino Raiola high-profile client who has not done a very good job, as long as they've stayed with Mino Raiola, of getting paid over and over again. So can you keep up with this train if you get on it? That's what I'm asking.
And Nikki, let's not forget that the only dark period of Donnarumma's career at Milan is when there were these transfer links with Mino Raiola that he requested a crazy amount of money. There was that scene where fans threw dollar bills at him and called him Dollarumma. They showered him with money. And you could see that he visibly suffered it. That was the worst stretch of his form when he resigned that big money contract and people thought he was all about the money. This is going to be another situation now where there's going to always be lucrative offers. I agree with you. He is the top keeper in Serie A. He's one of the top three keepers in my mind in the world. He has no weakness. He's good on aerial balls. He's excellent with his reflexes. He's worked on his distribution, which at 16, obviously, it's not a strong suit, but he's now good with the ball at his feet. There's nothing that he cannot do well. He does everything at an almost elite level. So if Milan go into the Champions League and they have that money coming in from that competition, what a shame it would be that all these years that Donnarumma has been the starter, it's more than five now, that he now goes the season that they get into the Champions League. It would just be a real shame, because it would have been great to see Donnarumma playing with his childhood team that he's already played at so long, despite only being so young, and not be able to line up there with the Champions League music. So I think it would be a real shame. Just closing out on silly season here on Serie Awesome. Alessio Romagnoli links and reports that he wants 6 million euro salary a season, and he's been having the worst season of his career at Milan. What's going on?
Well, apparently, actually, like, it's, you know, Mino Raiola is the one who's obviously asking for just under 6 million, so double his effectively double his current salary. And I just, do you think this is his worst season? I don't know. Yeah, maybe.
For Milan, absolutely.
You think so? Absolutely.
He's never received this much criticism. He's made so many mistakes.
Yeah, but is it because, like, now there's something to play for? Does that make sense? So his so then his mistakes have been noticed a lot more, because for me, I always felt like he's not that great. But, you know, I mean, he's actually, I think he's grown in his role. And I know that, you know, he is obviously the captain and everything like that. I do think sometimes it's quite hard to let go of somebody who does feel a certain belonging to the jersey. You know, while 6 million, I think, is an absolutely ridiculous figure to offer anyone, especially what is going on at the moment. If you are going to try to keep Donnarumma on these high wages to satisfy Mino Raiola, or try to lower them as much as possible and keep it at 8 million, which is the offer right now, you might need to give Romagnoli, because they are both Mino Raiola's clients, right? So you have to satisfy him in any way you can.
Well, Mina, I'm getting the universal sign of let's move on from the producer. So we will move on to something that has no silliness in it, and that is the Italian national team that hasn't lost since October of 2018. They've been absolutely incredible under Roberto Mancini. They picked up 2 wins in last week's World Cup qualifiers, beat Northern Ireland 2-0, goals from Domenico Berardi and Ciro Immobile, and then beat Bulgaria for the first time away in a World Cup qualifier 2-0 again, with goals from Andrea Pelotti from the penalty spot and Emmanuel Locatelli with a really cool finish. So it's the World Cup qualifiers, but it's the Euros that are upcoming in only a matter of months. And rightfully so, there's a lot of excitement around the Azzurri right now and what they could do in this summer's tournament.
Yeah, I mean, Bulgaria away from home is probably one of those games that you're... is slightly less intimidating without fans in the stadium, makes a difference. But nevertheless, that wasn't something that was thought of as a straightforward thing to go and win. Italy just keep winning. And I think what's most exciting probably is that they're doing it. And everyone's had to do a bit of this during this international break because we're squeezing so many games together. But they're doing it while rotating like half the team.
Yeah.
It's not the same 11 going and winning these 2 games. They were 2 very different games. I thought the Bulgaria game was really scrappy and nasty, but a lot of character to come through that and get the same result, to not concede a goal again, to show that you've got both of these 2 options up front in Belotti and Immobile who can score goals in at least these games. We're still going to worry about whether they can do it in the big games against your Spains and your Germanys and your Frances, but at least in these games, getting goals. So really encouraging week for Italy so far. We've still obviously got a game to come, which will be a few hours after we finish recording this, so possibly finished by the time you listen.
I do actually think that they are like... well, they should be considered as one of the teams that could potentially win Euro 2020. I think that they deserve that level of respect. I don't think they're being given it at the moment by the bookies or various different people. I haven't even heard them being mentioned, considering the abomination that was produced by Germany in the World Cup and still not understanding why, you know, I mean, Italy didn't even qualify. I get that. But what Mancini has built has been truly special. Because it's like Nikki said, it's just, you know, change everything, but the tactics are still there, the strategy is still the same. And it just seems like there are just so many different avenues, different players that you can use in Insigne, or whether it's going to be, you know, Berardi or Chiesa, or, and it's just each one is more frightening than the other, because what happened for Italy for a long time was that the oldies were really good and the youngsters, the very young ones, were very good, but there was nothing in between. And now these youngsters that are coming into play who are 24 or whatever are very, very good. I mean, Locatelli's goal, very, very amazing, you know, and what a loss that is for the under 21 side, you know. But I look at that and I think they're extraordinary. England always does really well in the qualifiers, not necessarily always well in the tournament. So that always is something in the back of my mind. And I do worry that Turkey is the first team that they face, because I'm kind of in love with Turkey. I've always thought they're really good, you know. Mancini has worked there, understands Turkish football perfectly, obviously was the man to beat Antonio Conte's Juventus when he was at Galatasaray. So I hope to navigate that situation well, but I do think this is a team that we can really get behind. They play an exciting brand of football. It's not trying to copy anyone. It's its own revolution. And they have the right personnel for it. So,
Mina, I'm going to put all three of us on the spot. We're going to decide right now, for the first time ever, historic moment, an impromptu best Italy starting 11. I don't know how we're going to agree on this, but we're going to have to try. So let's start in goal. I think we all agree it's going to be Gigio Donnarumma, so we can move on from that. There's no drama there. There's going to be drama, though, in the back line. Let's start with the center backs, because this is where things get testy. I'm going to put out four names. Acerbi, Bastoni, Chiellini, Bonucci. Assuming everyone's healthy, who are your two starting center backs?
I think for me it's Acerbi and Bonucci. I would love it to be Chiellini, but he's playing so few games now. He's playing so few games. How am I going to feel confident in his fitness, in his being at the top of his game? Of course, like instinctively, you'd want to see them there. You want them to be that partnership they've always been. It's an advantage always to have those two players who have that relationship and that rapport. But I think
I trust Acerbi's
performance.
I'm worried
levels.
About the pace of Acerbi.
In the big moments also, I feel like in the Champions League big moments, if the tide is going against them, I'm not sure. Like, I feel like Chiellini comes alive in really big games, you know, because he just loves to have that bandage on top of his head. Whereas sometimes I worry about it, whether or not Acerbi can swim against the tide.
But this is honestly the part of the team I trust the least overall. Yeah. I don't trust any combination in this group. I don't trust Bonucci, who should be the number one who you think, we definitely rely on him.
Bonucci's better with Chiellini.
And when have we ever said that about the Italian national team defense? That's always been the part that you're like, they're fine at the back.
Strong.
The back line has always been amazing. I don't see how you can't put Bastoni in there, though. A starting defender for the best team in Italy that's going to 90% win this.
Because of what Ronaldo did to him in the Coppa Italia. That's what worries you.
Yeah, but it's Cristiano Ronaldo. I mean, Cristiano Ronaldo.
Well, he's in the Euros, right?
Yeah, but I mean, but what's Acerbi going to do? Is Acerbi suddenly going to lock down Cristiano Ronaldo or Leo Bonucci?
Leo
Bonucci
would
make so many mistakes against Ronaldo. He just doesn't have to play him every week. So I think that it's going to be Chiellini, Bonucci. I think that's what Mancini's going to do. I wouldn't want that. I would put in Bastoni. And Acerbi Bastoni doesn't excite me either. That kind of scares me. Like, Acerbi's fine for Lazio, but he's in the Euros now. And that's why I'm probably going to have to go with the Juventus pair, even though I know that it doesn't make a lot of sense. But I think that if Chiellini's healthy, Mancini goes with his old guns that he trusts.
Romagnoli was on this list Romagnoli. Not long ago. We've suddenly dropped that name off.
No, don't do this to me.
He was on
don't
this list not long ago.
Okay, so we're not going to agree on the center backs. Let's move on to the fullbacks, which is probably not another very exciting area. I'll give you my two that I would start. I would probably go with Davide Calabria at right back. I know Di Lorenzo has also been mentioned. On the left, I think you can go Emerson or Spinazzola. I think Spinazzola should be a starter, and I really like what Calabria has done at Milan. He led the league in tackles at one point. So my two starting fullbacks, Calabria at right and Spinazzola at left back.
I agree.
I wouldn't turn my nose up at that at all. I do like Di Lorenzo, and I think he's done well for the national team. And I think sometimes when you look at national teams, there's like a temptation to cram in the 11 players who you think are individually the best players rather than the magic mix that sometimes works. And I think Di Lorenzo has done a good job for the national team. But I do really love how Calabria has played in Serie A this season. So.
And there's also Florenzi that maybe would be...
Yeah, Florenzi's a good... It could be Florenzi or... I forgot. I knew I was forgetting someone. Florenzi
it's
or
nice
Calabria,
it's nice that Florenzi's gone elsewhere and I think been able to grow a bit beyond where he was growing in Rome. But to me, he's the number three on that list.
Really?
Right, midfield
behind
three,
those other two, yeah.
Six names for the midfield three. This is the area that's perhaps where Italy are the most stacked. Jorginho, Verratti, Barella, Sensi, Locatelli, Zaniolo, if he's fit, I'll put him. I don't care. You put him anywhere. I love Zaniolo. But let's go with the midfield three, who we think, apart from Zaniolo. I would probably go with Verratti, Jorginho, and Barella.
I think that's probably what it will be and probably what it should be, but I'm so tempted to take Jorginho out and put Locatelli in. I'm in love with Locatelli's football at the moment. He's so good to watch. Very possibly it's not the right choice. Obviously, Sassuolo is not Chelsea in terms of the games you're playing every week and the competition that you're getting in playing in European competition as well. But I really like this kid. I think he's another one who's special. So
the passing is going to be so good. Locatelli and Verratti, and then you have Barella that's going to do the crazy box-to-box. You've got a little bit of everything in the midfield. Honestly, spoiled for riches. That's easily Italy's biggest strength. Move on to the forward line.
I also want to say, like, you know, there is Sensi. I don't know how good his energy
is. He's been out so much, though.
Yeah. But he would have gotten a shot had he been... Remember the first few months at Inter, how good Stefano Sensi was? If it was that Sensi who stayed healthy.
I keep remembering that, you know? And I find it really difficult.
He's easy with that. Absolutely.
Barella's got to be the first name there. I know I have an issue with Verratti because I think that he's capable of a red card or two. So that's the only thing. Otherwise, I do think he's... can be wonderful. Jorginho, I would take out. I would put Locatelli.
Front line, wingers, you have Federico Chiesa of Juventus, Lorenzo Insigne on the left. Those are probably the two. I don't know if we should even mention Nicolò Zaniolo because he's been injured. He's had two catastrophic ligament injuries. I think if he's fit, he would have been in the lineup, but I don't think he's going to be... just coming back now to Roma in training. It's going to be a long time, I think, before we see, unfortunately, the best of Nicolò Zaniolo. Are there really anyone else that you would put in as a starter? It's going to be Insigne and Chiesa, right? Given the seasons that they've had with Napoli.
I prefer Insigne for his ball playing skills. I think that it's better suited sometimes. I think Chiesa would be the person to play if he's not playing, you know. But I like Berardi on the other option. Yeah. I think it's a nice measure of what can happen. And then I do think Bernardeschi is very good in making things very clean and simple. Again, not the one with the talent that's going to terrify you. But I think that this is what's great, is that there is such a nice balance of everything. There's the creative ball player. There is the you know, Chiesa, who's just so... he bursts into, like, action, and you just think, wow, what's going to happen now, you know? My only issue, and the thing that makes me think that we can't win the Euros... is it Immobile or Belotti? And that's where I would actually prefer a false number nine.
Before we get to that, I do think we missed one name, which is Berardi. I think he's also in that mix for the wide forward positions. I think he's played really well. I agree that the first choice too is Insigne and Chiesa, but I think Berardi...
But that's why I'm saying Berardi is always going to be there. It's between that side.
Yeah.
It's hard to think of an Italy that's been so spoiled for riches at the winger position. When you think of Italy, forgetting the defense, because they've always been amazing in that department, but in the forward line, you normally think of the attacking midfielders or the second strikers, right? Before this generation, you think of the Tottis and the Del Pieros, and the number nines were always good, but never really at the level of the creative players behind. Even before that, the likes of Roberto Baggio. But now Italy actually have a lot of proper wingers, which was never really an area that you thought of when you thought of Italian greats. So I think the last really contentious decision is going to be, who do you play up front? Because there's this elephant in the room named Ciro Immobile, who just tied the single season scoring record of 36 goals last season with Lazio and tied Gonzalo Higuain. But when he's on the national team, he isn't Ciro Immobile. There's also Andrea Belotti of Torino, and maybe even Ciccio Caputo of Sassuolo, even though he's been injured a few times. But you got to put Ciccione out there.
Caputo's, he could be the third string.
So it's really a fight. Is it between Belotti or Ciro Immobile?
And what about Moise Keane?
It's great that he's getting time at Paris Saint-Germain after it didn't work for Everton. Absolutely, but it's probably going to be mostly a timeshare between Immobile and Belotti.
So can I tell you honestly, like, if this was really my choice, I would say we don't need either of them. And I would actually find a way, at least of trying between now and the Euros, I would try having Berardi, Chiesa and Insigne as my front three and see if you can work it out. Because I think those are your most exciting options. I think those are the players who I most believe can make things happen. If you're asking me to pick between Immobile and Belotti, which I think is the choice that that Mancini's going to make, and look, I can give my opinion, but Mancini has earned a right for us all to think he's right and I'm wrong. I think it probably is still Immobile. I think that the You know, Immobile has taken a while to become everything we want him to, but he did score goals in the Champions League. He did sink Borussia Dortmund. He has shown that he can do it in those bigger stages. But honestly, I would prefer the false nine.
I agree with you. I think that, I mean, he did score that. I thought it was a great goal against Northern Ireland. You know, I do feel like there's always a level of disrespect being aimed at Immobile. I don't know why. I mean, we know
he's the most disrespected player who scored 36 goals in a season.
He really is insane. I feel that way.
He scored 36 goals in a season.
It's kind of the way that people used to describe Mario Gomez in Germany. You know, it's kind of like, yeah, he scores goals, but, you know. But I do feel like he is disrespected. He has been wonderful, so I don't want to take anything away from him. I do think Mancini will choose Belotti, but I agree with you entirely. I want false number nine. I want the best playing up top. And I just think that for me, it's Insigne, Berardi and Chiesa all the way. Just lots and lots of movement. And if you want to change that, why not bring in Moise Kean? Sorry, well, one more.
We've disagreed on some things, but what we can all agree on is that this Italian national team is stacked and they're so probably going to have a pretty good run at Euro 2021. Another big game this weekend is Milan against the Blue Cerchiati Sampdoria. Now, the good news for Milan, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, Ante Rebic, Ismail Benacer, all expected to be back in the starting lineup, who have all had a bunch of injuries this season. Is there still a whisper of a Scudetto chance if they can get Inter to mess up a few times? And Milan now in the final stretch of the season, looking to be healthier than they've been for large swaths of the season.
Listen, I mean, if it's up to me, I would basically give passports to Frank Kessier and Benacer and make them Italians and play them in my midfield in a heartbeat. So the fact that Benacer is back, the fact that he made the difference in the last match, just coming on and you just could see just how elevated Milan's game was. Having those two available in midfield for me is huge. There's still the loss of Calabria, which I feel like is a loss. But at the end of the day, I think this is a really primed Milan. I feel like, you know, they are now playing once a week, so they have time to recover from all of this. So you don't feel like Kessié is just running up and down the pitch trying to do everyone's job, because that is who he is. He's a magnificent, magnificent player. But now they have a chance to relax. Having said that, the gap might be too big. And as Nikki mentioned in our last podcast, there's also the head-to-head to consider. So when you look at all that, it might be too tough considering how far along Inter are and how much they're going to be so gung-ho about trying to win this. It remains to be seen.
Yeah, I think I said it earlier this podcast. Win this game, and even though Inter have the games in hand, you've closed that gap right down, at least for a few hours. Maybe it can be something. No one should be looking at this and thinking that it's anything other than heavily favoured for Inter now. Mm-hmm. But you play the cards you've got, and as you said, Matteo, this is back to something like a full-strength Milan. I think Mina and I were both raving about Benacer again last podcast. It's a good team when everyone's there. It's been a really good team even without everyone there. But win your games and
see what happens. And Milan had a huge win before the international break, coming back against Fiorentina, winning 3-2, picking up 3 points. That potentially gives them an outside chance to go back to the top of the table, but it's not in their hands. It's all up to Inter, and it doesn't seem like they've shown any signs of slowing down. So just a recap of how things are going into this weekend. Inter currently with a game in hand and a 6-point lead over Milan, a 10-point lead over Juventus, and it's going to be a great fight for that fourth spot. Juventus are only 2 points ahead of fifth place. So it's time to start looking in the rearview mirror, because there's Atalanta, Napoli, Roma, and Lazio all fighting for that one spot in the table to get to the Champions League. I hope you've all enjoyed this episode of Serie Awesome. Please share and subscribe. And if you didn't like the episode, just keep those opinions to yourself.